On Robinhood Radio, it's time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage. David is a multimedia journalist with an online column at themediabeat.com and has reported since 2012 for the PBS network, mainly on ethical issues. He is also the author of a memoir, A Question of Paternity, Life as an Unaffiliated Reporter.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning July 25th, 2025. So, are the fissures that seem to be cracking the solid carapace of support from Donald Trump's MAGA base now being successfully papered over? That's what some reporters are saying, those whose sources seem mainly to be people within Trump's own close circle. Even the New York Times, never normally any kind of friend to this president, carried a headline, "Trump deflected MAGA's wrath over Epstein." At the same time, though, the editors were careful to add a careful rider to that supposed deflection, at least for now, the Times said. Tellingly, I think, the murky story of child sexual predator Jeffrey Epstein, who evidently committed suicide while in pre-trial custody, is just about the only kind of issue that could have really caused fissures, the issue really being the support base's salacious appetite for conspiracy theories. Maybe some sort of satisfaction might be fully registered among the noisiest elements of the MAGA crowd now that the Trump administration, and I mean its Justice Department in particular, has opened discussions with Ghislaine Maxwell, the imprisoned fixer or accomplice for Epstein, as the press are often calling her, consigned as she is to a 20-year sentence. And the House Oversight Committee, Republican-controlled, remember, has voted to subpoena that same convicted sex trafficker to appear before them, evidently in search of more prominent names she could possibly divulge as being also involved in Epstein's sordid doings. This development comes alongside Trump's tame Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, deciding to shut the House down and so avoid any possible vote to have more so-labeled Epstein files made public, in spite of the Attorney General's earlier wanting to keep them unpublished. And Trump, too, it seemed, though he's since gotten somewhat twisted around over this. Oh, and I could go on about the Wall Street Journal story about Trump having allegedly sent a lewd birthday greeting to Epstein, complete with a drawing of a naked woman, sketched, we're told, in Trump's own fair hand. I could go on about it, but I won't, any more than I will go on about, today at least, about my own personal experiences with several members of the Maxwell family, including Ghislaine and her horribly influential and disgusting father, Robert Maxwell. I can more usefully, and I will, tackle that story or set of stories in another forthcoming edition of the Media Beat. Much more important or significant in the long run, I predict, is actually a current Trump success, not an awkward problem like Epstein and Maxwell, a victory with which Republicans of almost every stripe, not just MAGA, wouldn't dream of finding fault. It's the ending of federal funding for public broadcasting, which the party as a whole has demanded periodically, as often as it could, it seems, ever since such funding started nearly 60 years ago. Now it has finally come about, the result of votes in both chambers of Congress last week. A common question in many households has been, are we going to lose our NPR and our PBS? It's a question that sounded with added anxiety following the resignation, after 25 years at the network, of NPR's editor-in-chief, Edith Chapin, described by her colleagues as, quote, a champion for the newsroom, calm in the storm. Well, the realistic answer to the fear is frankly no. In recent years, NPR has received only 1% of its income from federal sources, and PBS a greater but not critical proportion of just 15%. I'd say these two national institutions will survive, but for the multitude of local radio and TV stations which those overarching countrywide entities serve, it could well be a very different matter. Surveys by, among others, the research and lobbying outfit that operates from Boulder, Colorado, called the Public Media Company, are now estimating that 78 public radio organizations and 37 TV organizations are at risk of closing down as a result of the cuts. The drive is now on to increase the already substantial contributions that are made to such stations by America's philanthropists and foundations. In keeping with the general pattern that prevails in so many realms of the country's economy, it's rural and remote places that find themselves in greatest need of public, taxpayers' support, in contrast with our densely populated cities and metropolitan districts. For those in my audience who might take an interest in the geographic part of the datelines on my weekly dispatches, I should say I am now back in my fairly regular summer posting, a northern posting, of course, in the great state of Maine, following my rather brief recent bit of reporting from Argentina. Maine has an interesting political complexion, and perhaps it can serve in an emblematic role when it comes to federal funding for public broadcasting. Maine happens to send just 2 House representatives to Washington, as few for this territorially large state, but sparse in population, as it has senators, 2, of course, the traditional number for all states. In the upper national chamber, 1 Maine senator is Republican, but she's Susan Collins, perpetually quizzical and often critical of Trump. And the other is an independent, the former governor Angus King, who tends to caucus with the Democrats. The 2 U.S. representatives are revealingly very different from each other. Shelley Pingree closely reflects her electorate, an urban and coastal population with a relatively higher proportion of college graduates. She's a straightforward Democrat, we can say, who robustly supports party positions, including vigorous championing of public broadcasting. On the other hand, the other representative is the canny Gerald Golden, who's also a Democrat, but one who has successfully gotten himself voted back in, despite the fact that his more inland and widespread district is comprised mainly of Trump supporters, largely white, rural, and working class. How canny is Golden? Well, he declined to endorse Kamala Harris in last year's presidential vote, and he has supported trade tariffs, suggesting 10% is a good rate to be applied to imports universally. However, on public broadcasting, he has hewed closely and strongly to his fellow Democrats' position. I'll quote directly from a statement he sent to reporters, myself included. Zeroing out federal funding would undermine or even shut down independent, nonpartisan, rural public television and radio networks such as Maine Public, which provides educational programming for children and critical public services such as the life-saving emergency alert system. This prompted a predictable response from a vocal Trump ally, the regional Republican spokeswoman Maureen O'Toole, who lashed into Golden for trying, quote, to protect funding for radical nonsense. In the end, all 4 of Maine's congressional delegation to both House and Senate voted against the new law ending federal funds for public broadcasting. Within that unanimity, the very pointed reference by Golden, and I'll again use the word canny for his reference to emergency alert systems, could provide a key to Democrats finding a way, long-term though the plan might be, to restore federal financing for public broadcasters, and in the process form common cause, perhaps surprisingly, with disaffected Republicans. In the wake of the disastrous July 4th floods that killed at least 135 people in Texas, 27 of them at an evangelical Christian summer camp for girls, Trump found himself performing a U-turn on his plans to abolish FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency. FEMA's lackluster response to the floods under Trump's pick to lead Homeland Security, Secretary Kristi Noem, is now making even die-hard Republicans edgy about the effect on their electoral support. They remember all too well how Hurricane Katrina in 2005, and yes, a lackluster response back then to that massive natural disaster, made President George W. Bush's approval ratings plummet and his disapproval numbers rocket upward, something that matters enormously when a president like now is in his second term and his popular legacy is in play. Our current president could end up being haunted by a very calculated observation made by a senator on the far opposite side of our continent from Maine, Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska. She's another frequent Trump skeptic like Susan Collins here, and she sharply drew attention to a potential emergency that came up just 9 days ago along her state's coastline. On social media, she wrote, quote, 7.3 magnitude earthquake off of Alaska and tsunami warnings. You know how I got this information? From public broadcasting. This very concrete and essential form of public service in broadcasting could turn out in practice to be an issue which, maybe quite unlike the Epstein scandal, brings out in droves those people whom Trump himself has called past supporters, P-A-S-T, in all caps, of course. Their disappointed, newly negative assessment of him, especially if there are more fatal disasters to be handled or mishandled in the coming months, could well prove enough to weaken the Republican vote in districts where it matters for the continuance of Trumpists in government, be it in House or Senate seats, or even, when 2028 comes, deciding which party next wins the White House. That's all from the Media Beat for this week. If you have been, thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.com.